Hello, and welcome to Nostalgia Arcana. I'm your host, Doug Leaf. Each episode of this podcast, we'll look back on the movies, TV, games, people, and phenomena that we still love talking about all these years later, and ask ourselves why these bits of pop culture still enchant us today. This week, we'll be revisiting...
Time has come for one and all to play ball. We're the members of the All-American League. We come from cities near and far. We've got Canadians, Irish ones.
In 1943, as men went off to fight in World War II, Wrigley of Wrigley Baseball fame decided we need to do something to keep people interested in this sport while the men are all away. And so the All-American Girls Baseball League was born. Today, we're focusing on A League of Their Own, the film which was a fictionalized set of girls playing in that league, but I think it's a wonderful film that brought a lot of attention to this really interesting footnote in sports history. So we're going to get into it. This one's a lot of fun. It's just it's one of those movies that every time it's on TV, you stumble onto it. You got to watch the entire thing. So I have an entire team with me. First, playing shortstop from Huntington Beach, California. She is my producer, and you've heard her on many past episodes, including but not limited to Clue, Jurassic Park, and many more. Please welcome back to the podcast, Amy Leaf.
Batter up!
Another veteran here playing left field, also from Huntington Beach, California. He has been on many of our past episodes, including most recently Disney Songs Part 2, Masters of the Universe, Golden Girls, and more. Please welcome back Ryan Merlow.
Take me out to the ball game.
And finally, again, from Huntington Beach, California, playing first base, she is another veteran of the show from both Disney song podcast episodes and many, many more. Welcome back to the show, Tanya Newton.
Mule.
Nag.
Guys, I'm really glad we're finally sitting down to do A League of Their Own. I'm going to probably make that mistake a bunch of times. And of course, we are talking about the Gina Davis movie, not the recent Amazon series, which is interesting in its own right, but a very different take on this material. But I'll start, as we always do, with our nostalgic memories of the movie. So, Tanya, why don't you kick this one off? Where do your nostalgic memories of this one lie?
I think it's really that I have no true memory of the first time I ever saw this. It's just always been in, like, the zeitgeist. It's just, I've always constantly watched it. It's always on, just like you said, Doug. I think whenever it shows up, you're totally watching this. This is just one of the things. It's just always been there. I don't have a specific memory of ever seeing it for the first time. And it's just fun, and it's just girl power. And the vintage quality is always a lot of fun.
Ryan, how about you?
I'm kind of like Tanya. I don't ever remember the first time I watched it, but there's three movies that if they ever come on TV, I'm going to watch them. And it's Sister Act and Sister Act 2, My Cousin Vinny, which we've already done, and A League of Their Own. And I don't know why I love those three movies, but they're always fun to watch and they're fun to revisit. And you can watch them a million times and still be entertained.
Aim?
Yeah, I don't know that I have a specific memory of watching this either, but our family was a big baseball family, so it made sense that we would watch a baseball movie, and this is just one of the best of the baseball movies. And it was, you know, as a girl or a woman, you know, I it's fun to watch a piece that focuses on women. So it you know, always enjoy it. Definitely watch it when it's on.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as all of you, which is like, it's funny that we don't have a specific memory of the first time any of us saw it, because we have seen it so many times. And, you know, like you, we're all roughly the same age. We were probably all around 10 or 11 when this came out. So we would have probably seen it in the theaters and then a million times at home. And like, this is like sports movie comfort food. We're on kind of a run on the podcast of sort of slightly off sports movies. We just did Happy Gilmore. And then next we're doing The Big Lebowski, which is not really a bowling movie, but it's sort of a sport. And a big part of that film. But like, yeah, as you said, it was really neat to watch a movie about, you know, female athletes, which is incredibly rare. In fact, I'm having trouble even thinking of another one other than maybe what, The Cutting Edge? There's very few movies about female sports. And the fact that this is, you know, it's not historically accurate in terms of like none of the actors are playing real life ball players. They're all fictional members of the real Rockford Peaches and Racine Bells and stuff. But it still has this ring of historical accuracy where you feel like I'm still getting to sort of visit this period in time, even though, you know, again, the story itself is all made up.
Right. And it's a baseball movie, but it's not a baseball movie. Like, this is a movie about sibling rivalry and friendship and family. And it just has the backdrop of a historical sports piece. To me, it's fun because it has that backdrop, but it's almost not needed. I mean, of course it's needed because it's about that time period. But if you really think about it, to me, it's a really good story about these two sisters experiencing something together.
And I always love anything historical fiction. That's always been one of my favorite genres to read. And especially World War II, for me, that era is very, I'm very, very interested in that era. So I thought that also, the time period for me was really great too.
I'm actually now with both of my boys in baseball, and we're, I think, three seasons in and just learning more, and I'm the team mom. Just getting slightly more into baseball. I actually appreciate it on a different, like, on a sporty level. It is a lot of fun, and just seeing some of the things, and it's very funny. Like, just rewatch today, I was like, oh, I sort of know more. Like, I just felt a little more like I knew about the baseball, like the technical elements, a tiny bit more. I mean, my kids are little. They're not playing on, like, any high level by any means. But it is fun to sort of also see that baseball aspect. But I think Amy's right. This is a movie about, like, sisterhood, not just the sisters, but I think the women together and bonding, forging that bond.
Yeah, you know, one of the criticisms that I've seen leveled at this movie that I don't agree with is that Dottie, the Gina Henson's character, our protagonist, is too much of a Mary Sue. Meaning, you know, a Mary Sue is any protagonist who's kind of too good at everything and therefore harder to root for. You know, you need to give your character some flaws. But I don't think that's true. She is a Mary Sue at baseball. She's, you know, might as well be Mickey, or I guess Minnie Mantle, right? She's exceptional, but she isn't great at being a sister. Like, that's the struggle. She constantly fails through this movie to recognize what her sister is going through. And that's the big, you know, lesson she needs to learn at the end.
I actually disagree a bit with that, Doug, because I think throughout, I mean, I've never heard that term Mary Sue. I think she's very well aware that Kit is constantly being compared to her. And I think a lot of that natural talent that can't help but come out, I think she does try to keep it down. I don't think she never invites the compliments. She's, you know, even from the start, and I'm sure we'll get into this, is, John Lovitz won't take Kit without Dottie. She's doing a lot of these things. She's good at them, whether she has a significant interest in them. But I think throughout the show, the movie, she absolutely recognizes that she outshines her sister, and she tries to dull some of that shine. She tries to not make herself. I mean, clearly she is trying to be a standout because Ira needs her to be to make the league successful. But in general, she's not trying to. I think she recognizes her sister, which is, I think, where we'll get to the ultimate debate about what happened in that final play. I do think she has recognized that, and I do think she tries to, I don't know, dull that shine because of how her, what the struggles her sister goes through.
I think she, and she walked away from everything also. I mean, at the, you know, she didn't come back for a second season like she could have, because she was the star. I mean, she could have made, but her family and kind of a life in Oregon or that was much more important to her. And I think that giving Kit that, you know, the shine, at especially at the end of the movie, I think was really gracious of her and selfless.
I think it's, is it Kit's fault for being a bratty little sister, or is it Dottie's fault for just happening to be good at things? I mean, it's, I don't think it's necessarily fair to put that on Dottie. I mean, why should she dull her shine? I think that Kit has some maturing to do.
Oh, 100%.
And she needed to go to the other.
But going back to Doug's question is, she doesn't, and I disagree with that premise. Mm-hmm. It's just that I think you're right. She shouldn't have to, but she does because she's trying to be a better sister. She recognizes it. She doesn't make her – I think she – tries to she doesn't try to be a standout because she knows it hurts her sister's feelings. She can't help but be a standout, but I think she tries to she tries to lessen that impact, like, repeatedly, even like, sure, as we get into it, where, well, no, I asked to transfer myself, not you, because she, you know, I think she, and you're right, Amy, she's too immature.
I think she recognizes her sister is in distress. She's, you know, she's not blind to it, but I do think she probably goes about things the wrong way a lot as the story goes on. It's like, she sees what her sister is in distress, and the decision she makes is not what, you know, she thinks she's doing the right thing, but, and she somehow makes it worse. But we'll kind of get to all that as we go through the beat by beat of, like, the different scenes. But it's, yeah, you're right. A lot of this is tied into that final play and the ambiguity of that. So we'll really dig into this meatball when we get to that part of the movie.
I will say that just the fact that we're debating this already speaks to the fact of the story and how just relatable it is. You're either the Dottie or the Kit in your family if you have siblings or cousins or whatever it is, you know. And I think that makes it more interesting to watch, that you just are able to resonate with one of the characters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if this was a movie about just like, hey, these are some people that are good at sports, let's watch them play sports, no one would remember this movie. There's a million sports movies like that that are just sort of, you know, okay, great. I watched a fictional athlete win a fictional game. So what? You know, it's all of the character stuff here, right, that makes this saying. Absolutely. All right, so let's get into it. So the movie opens with this quick sequence of elderly Dottie, who is physically played by a woman who looks incredibly like Gina Davis, but is not. But it is dubbed with Gina Davis's voice.
You might need that.
Where'd you find this?
It was one of those cartons that came over after.
Needs oil. Who doesn't?
You ready?
I'm not going.
Oh, Mom! I already got two children. I don't need a third.
Why is it so important that I go?
Well, for one thing, it'd be nice if you just left the room.
Oh.
Besides, these are your old friends.
They probably won't even remember me.
Oh, the Queen of Diamonds, Dottie Hinson?
Margaret, I just don't think this is a good idea.
Oh, come on, Mom. I mean, you're gonna get to see Aunt Kit. You two hardly ever get to see each other.
We still won't. Kit won't be there. She'll be traveling around with that husband of hers.
Frank, he has a name. Frank, and he's always been very nice to you.
It makes me nervous. There's a lot of reasons why I can't.
Mom?
Honey, I'm not comfortable about this. I'm not really part of it. It was never that important to me. It was just something I did. That's all.
Mom, when are you going to realize how special it was? How much it all meant?
I Yeah, I know how you feel. I really do. But you're going.
That's not Gina Davis. I thought that it looks exactly like Gina Davis.
It is not.
And I read.
Really?
And I just read like a trivia that said that when you compare them, since Gina Davis just in the last few years was the same age as that actress, contemporaneous with the movie, it's uncanny. They said that the pictures of them are just so strangely similar.
And I thought Kit looked like the old Kit. I thought looked like Kit.
Lori Petty.
A lot too. And I thought that they were like the same. I thought that they were the same person. They just made him look older.
I always thought it was prosthetics.
Yeah. Nope. Wow.
Yeah. Well, the voice, casting. I didn't realize that they put the voices on. I think that's what threw us.
Not Lori Petty.
I would have never thought about that.
It was just Gina Davis, but not Lori Petty did not dub the older version of Kit.
Hmm. Boy, Penny Marshall did a good job on that one.
Yeah, we should mention Penny Marshall is the director. Absolutely need to give her credit. She's an exceptional director.
She did great here. Yeah.
Yeah. So we watch her pack up. Her daughter is kind of, you know, she's kind of reluctant to go, and we'll find out she's on her way to go to Cooperstown, the Baseball Hall of Fame, for the unveiling of this exhibit on the All-American Girls Baseball League. So her daughter kind of, you know, nudges her out the door to go. We watch her grandkids being competitive, siblings being competitive at sports. And she kind of just encourages them to be competitive with each other, which is interesting. And she eventually just hops off on her journey, and we follow her through the credits to Doubleday Field. And she's just sort of watching all of her old colleagues kind of just, you know, tossing a ball around on as we start to fade into the 1943 part of the story. Guys, any thoughts on this opening?
I thought I like when a movie starts off with kind of foreshadow. I don't know, like the end, a piece of the end at the beginning, and then goes back. I like that. I like that way that they started. I thought it was nice.
It's a good framing device. Yeah, and
yeah,
I think
I like that.
They could have cut back to older Dottie more throughout the movie. I think they kind of wisely just saved it for the beginning and the end. It wasn't necessary.
That was perfect. Yeah.
And it wasn't too much.
It was good.
It wasn't too much at the beginning either. Like, they pretty much showed a snippet and then dove right in. It could have been a little bit too long, but I think the timing was good.
I do too.
Also, one credit I wanted to spotlight here is that the music for this movie is done by Hans Zimmer before he was known for going for the score of every movie. So, yeah, really interesting to see him here before he was famous.
I was gonna. My trivia said that he had no clue about anything about baseball, so he didn't have any like sporty background to sort of, I guess, inspire any of his compositions.
Interesting. Well, he's never been Batman either, but he did that, so you know. but yeah, you know, he's so known for having one very specific type of score now, and you look back at this and like The Lion King, and they're so different. So I sort of missed this Hans Zimmer. So we get a newsreel. You know, our boys are off to war. It's narrated by Harry Shearer of The Simpsons. It's actually the voiceover here. And we hear about Walter Harvey, who is our stand-in for Wrigley. So he's, in this case, it's chocolate bars instead of chewing gum. And Irel Lowenstein, his associate, are trying to figure out how to keep baseball going. And we cut to Willamette, Oregon, where the handsomest man in the world, John Lovitz, watches Dottie and Kit play ball.
Look, sis, she's getting everybody out high. Don't swing at that pitch, okay?
I can hit it.
You can't.
I can.
Kit, this bat's too heavy. You're never going to get it around.
I will.
Kit, listen. There's a big pole on the right side, okay? Don't look. Well, if she pitches inside, you're going to have to pull it, okay?
I know.
Let her up.
No high ones.
I like the high ones.
Mule.
Ned!
And this is where we get that line you quoted earlier about how Kit likes the high ones.
Yep.
Lay off the high ones, Kit.
Lay off the high ones.
I like the high ones.
Nag.
Mule.
Yeah, it's cute, and it's like, you know, they're sniping at each other, but it's loving. It's not like it'll get more vicious later.
Agreed.
Right. I have a hard time. Like, I'm not really sure how old they are.
Oh,
married.
She's like 26. It said something. There was somewhere in the IMDb. I went through all the IMDb trivia about 30 minutes ago.
So Dottie was 26?
Around 26. Like
21 or so?
Something like that. It didn't really specifically get into Kit's age, but it said if you track back something on one of the pictures from when they're at Cooperstown, you could figure out her birth year.
Oh, okay.
There you go. You got to freeze frame it, but thank God the IMDb trivia people are here to do that.
Yeah. I like the beginning of the movie. I mean, the beginning of this part, because John Lovitz is such a standout with all of his lines and how he interacts with the cow and will you shut up? And it's like, it's really funny.
Yeah, he feels like he walked off the set of SNL to do this. It's a very John Lovitz performance. Like, it's all of his shtick. But, like, they don't miss an opportunity to have, like, every line out of his mouth is a one-liner. Like, it's all perfect. Funny.
Yeah.
I mean, he's great. He's great in this movie. I just thought the comedic kind of, the comedy that he adds to it is just perfect.
Just to continue with my font of knowledge, apparently he had a bit of a larger role in the filming, and it because the director's cut was so long, they really did condense it to just the best of his lines, but that he actually had a significantly more screen time in an earlier cut.
Yeah, it's interesting because we see him and then we don't see him at all, right? Once they make the team, that's it.
Yeah, well, he's a scout.
Once he drops them off, that he's gone, right?
Right.
Yeah. He says something like, I hate when they get attached to me like this.
Yeah.
How's my John Lovitz?
It's pretty good. So we watch Kit. She swings and misses on two high ones because Dottie is right. They're hard to hit. And then there's a pitch that goes down the middle and she doesn't go for it and strikes out. And so Dottie is at bat. She hits one deep into center field and they win. So she's the hero. Kit's the zero. And someone says something like, good thing your sister bailed you out. So, like, we've set the dynamic right there. There it is.
Right there, yeah.
And so we go back to the farm, and this is where John Lovitz pays them a visit while they're milking cows to entice them to join the team.
Hey! Hey, yourself.
Oh, doesn't that hurt them?
Doesn't seem to.
Well, it would bruise the hell out of me.
Who are you?
I'm Ernie Cappadino. I'm a baseball scout. I saw you playing today. Not bad, not bad. You ever hear of Walter Harvey makes Harvey bars?
You know, the candy.
Yeah, you feed them to the cows when they're constipated.
That's the guy. He's starting the girls' baseball league. So we can make a buck while the boys are overseas. Want to play?
Huh?
Nice retort. Tryouts are in Chicago. It's a real league, professional.
Professional baseball?
Mm-hmm. They'll pay you $75 a week.
We only make 30 at the dairy.
Well then, this would be more, wouldn't it? You interested?
Come on. $75 a week? Pull her leg for a while. Mine are long enough already.
Look, your country needs you, and you can not only play ball, but you're kind of a dolly. That's what we're looking for.
Oh, now I get it. Listen, mister, I'm a married woman. My husband's overseas.
Oh, relax. I'm talking looky, no touchy. Just that we want girls who are easy on the eyes.
Well, I'll go. I'm ready right now. I gotta sign something.
I don't want you. I want her, the one who hit the ball.
And then Dottie doesn't want to go, and Kit wants to, so they kind of argue over it, and they both end up going.
I think that's also the mark of Dottie being a good sister, is that Dottie is very content. She's very good at her life. She is that, what did you call it, Doug?
Mary Sue.
But she's also content with what she's doing. She's stepping out of that comfort zone, I think, solely for the purpose of her sister.
Yeah, and we'll learn, I don't think we've learned this yet, but her husband, Mr. Henson, Bill Pullman, we'll meet later, is off to war. So she's understandably like, she's got a lot on her mind. So going and playing baseball professionally is not something she's ever really thought about, even though it's $75 a week, which is a lot of money in 1943.
More than they were making at the dairy.
Way more.
And I think Kit, I think Kit is much more of like a free spirit. I get that kind of that free spirit, fun. You know, she's younger, could be, but naivete. But Dottie's much more like focused on her life and happy with what she has there.
Right. Well, even when they're later at the house and Kit goes out with the girls to have a good time and Dottie stays home.
Yeah.
It's like they're very clearly who they are, no matter what they're.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have like different personalities on the field versus off. Right. They are who they are. But, you know, Dottie doesn't want to go. As you said, Kit really wants to go. But Ernie, that's John Lovitz's character's name, won't take Kit by herself, which is not surprising, given that she didn't perform particularly well in this game.
Right.
And so, you know, as he says, something like, she's the goods, you're not. But then he does feel her arm and notice that, oh, she's a good pitcher. Like, she's got the arm. Because that's her position. Kit is pitcher. Dottie is a catcher. Which is important because the climax of the movie does not work if those are not their positions. Kit even says at this scene after Ernie leaves, when they're, you know, kind of setting a table, like, you know, she says something like, I got to get out of here. I'm nothing here. Right. She does. Unlike Dottie, who's waiting for her husband, Kit has nothing or tying her to Willamette, Oregon.
Yeah. Well, she's got that one option. Isn't there like a guy that likes her or something and she's not interested in him?
Yeah. They joke about how awful he is.
I'm imagining there's not anything. There's no one else there for her. Even if she was to stay, there would be no man.
It looks
for her,
like a pretty, like slim pickings there. I mean, they don't make it look like a booming metropolis in any means.
No, and I forget the joke they make about this guy that has a crush on her or something, this prospect, but it's something like, well, he does have a pulse. Like, it's something, I forget exactly what the joke is, but it's like,
he is alive.
Yeah. So we cut to Ernie on the train, you know, just joking around with this other guy, basically saying like, man, if I had your job, I'd kill myself. But he looks out the window and he sees that Dottie and Kit are indeed running to catch the train, which they do. And they're on their way. But first they got to make a stop in Colorado to look at another prospect, Marla Hooch.
In Fort Collins, Colorado. Oh.
We'll let you know.
Danny, I'm sorry.
Come on, let's go. We'll miss the train. Move.
What's the matter?
I can't use her.
She's great. Why not? What's the problem?
You know General Omar Bradley?
Yeah.
Well, there's too strong a resemblance.
All right. You mean you ain't taking her because she ain't pretty?
Well, look who just caught up. All right, come on, let's go. Pick those suitcases up. Now, come on. I'm not kidding. Let's go. Move. Come on. One foot in front of the other.
Hey, mister.
Huh?
I know my girl ain't so pretty as these girls. But that's my fault. I raised her like I would a boy. I didn't know any better. She loves to play. Don't make my little girl suffer because I messed up raising her. Please.
I was gonna say, she's not in the movie for as long as I remember. Like, it was interesting rewatching it recently and being like, wow, she really only makes it
halfway. It's about halfway.
Yeah, for the amount of time they invest in her here, about like, oh man, she's like this unbeatable slugger, like watch her like just hit these baseballs and destroy the inside of this gym. It is weird that she drops out, but I when we get to that scene, I was thinking about that a lot, like, why do they do that? And I think there is a good reason for why they do that, but it is a little odd that that's just, she's out.
But I do like the humanity that Dottie and Kit show here and how they're like, oh, we're not going. If you don't bring her, we're just not going to go.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're good girls.
And the reason they weren't going to bring her is because she's not the most attractive girl. And,
right.
You know,
she's a great ball player.
And I think, great ball player, but I think part of this it's a little bit of a novelty, this league, and I think that having nice looking women is part of the attraction for people coming in, being invested in this league. And Marla doesn't meet that
criteria.
Criteria. Well,
they want to put him in like these short skirts and parade them around. Exactly. They want to bring people out of their homes and into the ball fields, and they don't think a not
Marla Hooch is going to do it.
Right.
They really lay this on as we get into them actually playing, but yeah, you're right that they are held to a much higher standard than their male baseball playing counterparts were, right? No one came up to Babe Ruth and was like, "Hey man, you got to drop a few pounds."
Exactly.
It's like, you know, these girls have to, not only do they have to play, they have to do like flashy Harlem Globetrotter shit while they play.
Right.
And yeah, they got to look good and be quote unquote ladies, which Marla Hooch, mm-hmm. unfortunately, is not. And I love that scene where her dad, you know, goes to bat for her. You know, it's so heartbreaking. You can see how, you know, he loves his daughter so much. And she's like, you know, you know, the fact that she's not girly or whatever, that's my fault. Don't take it out on her. And yes, I do think without Gina Davis and Lori Petty leveraging their desirability against hers, that, you know, yeah, they probably would have dropped Marla.
Yeah, they wouldn't have taken her.
This also is the second movie with Tom Hanks and a hooch, which I don't know why what to make of that, but yeah.
Turner.
And we also use the term Marla Hooch in our family sometimes when you like take a picture of someone really far away.
Yes.
You're like, did you Marla Hooch me?
I do that for scale, though, not
sure.
Because you're unattractive.
Sure.
All right. I love that. Yeah. Dad tells her, you got to go where things happen. So we get to the field. Everybody's there. And again, John Lovitz peace out. And he says, I got to go give the wife a little pickle tickle. And he's gone.
I love the music in the scene when they're playing on the field.
It's like sports ragtime, like baseball in the 40s.
I would sing it, but I'm not that good. But you'll have to insert a clip here because it's really fun. Like, shows the action of them throwing the balls and like playing and... And you can see that Kit's a good ball player.
Right here in Chicago, young girls plucked from their families are gathered at Harvey Field to see which one of them can be the most masculine. Mr. Harvey, like your candy bars, you're completely nuts.
Yeah, this is the tryouts.
Yeah.
And we meet two other big characters, May and Doris, played by Madonna and Rosie O'Donnell, respectively. And they're both excellent here.
It's a great intro for the two of them. You see their dynamic. You see how, you know, Kit says something like, oh, so are all these girls going to play? And they're like, not some of you guys are leaving. Like, they clearly know from the start that they're staying, that they, you know, they feel like they're hot shit. And, you know, kind of coming off as, I don't know, a chip on their shoulder. I don't know if bullies is the right word, but they definitely came in hot. And I think they do a great job as, like, a tag team.
You so I ain't done yet. Watch this.
That's it?
Yeah, you can't do it, mate.
You do it. I can do it. Yeah, how long you been working on that, Doris?
That? Yeah. Took me about a year. Not counting them 2 months I was in the hospital, bat hit me right in the head. Bam.
Really?
Yep.
Your head and not your behind, because that looks really swollen.
Hey, what the heck kind of a thing is that
I'm
to say
joking,
to me,
okay,
man?
I'm sorry.
That ain't funny.
I'm nervous, all right? What are you looking at?
Yeah, what are you looking at?
Nothing.
Yeah. Right? Nothing.
All these girls going to be in the league? You wish.
You do wish.
They're going to have four teams, 16 girls to a team.
That's right.
64 girls.
Yeah, what are you, a genius?
You know, they got over 100 girls here, so some of yous are gonna have to go home.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Come on, Doris.
Those people are jerks.
What do you mean, some of us? Do it. Okay, some of them are going home.
Hey, how did you do that? Excuse me. Hey, you caught that? Hello?
Doris.
Did you see?
Doris,
jeez, let's go practice. She caught him with her
bitch.
They're basically Timon and Pumbaa.
Yeah. And I feel like Madonna feel like that part, she didn't even have to act. And I feel like Rosie O'Donnell didn't even have to act. I feel like they're their own embodiment. They're real life kind of people who, you know, who play those parts. But yeah, once when Rosie O'Donnell throws the ball at Gina Davis and she catches it with her hand, they're all like, oh my gosh, okay, you're going to be part of the team too.
Okay, they're leaving.
Yeah, they're leaving. Yeah,
and then
exactly.
She's like, don't be so friendly. That's what Madonna says.
Yeah.
Don't be so nice.
And I believe we find out, I don't know if it's here or later, but basically Madonna's character, All the Way May, was some kind of exotic dancer. That was her job. And Rosie O'Donnell was the bouncer for her at the club.
Which is totally, yeah.
Yeah. And they do they sort of play the card with Rosie O'Donnell's character that, like, she isn't as ladylike as well, you know, sort of, but they don't go quite as hard as they do at Marla for that. They kind of make her the poster
child
for it.
They leave her alone, yeah.
So, yeah, Dottie has that barehanded catch, and now we're up to we're past the tryouts. Everybody made the team. They have all made it onto the Rockford Asses, and they are, no one wanted to laugh at that one. Peach. No. They're peaches. See, peach emoji.
What you skipped there is like the historical accuracy of one of the women not being able to read. I guess, would that be more common?
I think that'd be more common in the 40s. Yeah. Oh, yes. I forget the character's name, but yeah, she goes to try and figure out what team she's on and she can't read
Isn't she Helen Haley? I think she might be Helen. And then later she's a doctor.
Yeah. Oh, really? No, she married a doctor. Oh, no, that's Al and Sue married the doctor.
Because Madonna's character had, like, porn, like, right. books, and she taught her to read on the porn books.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In the car. Yeah.
She's reading. Does it matter what she's reading?
Exactly. I think that's great. I think that's so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now we get to, this sort of, like, there's a radio show about the league, and they're complaining about this is the masculinization of women, and we're basically retreated to like old lady Ben Shapiro telling women to stay home and, you know, everything else. There's the worry about sexual confusion because God forbid women play a game for a while. Intercut during the tryouts. Now we get to the sexy uniforms that they're told they're gonna have to wear. And the chaperones. This is, the charm and beauty school stuff.
And gracefully and grandly, gracefully and grandly, gracefully and grandly, gracefully and grandly, gracefully and grandly. All right, girls, come back. And sip down. Don't slurp. Sip. Down. Don't slurp. Sip. Down. Don't slurp. Sip. Down.
Stop that.
Right.
Don't slurp.
Good. Posture. Heads up. Back straight. And sit. Right over left. Legs always together. A lady reveals nothing. Stop. And the hair, soften and shorten. The eyebrows, thin and separate. There should be two. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Very nice. Lovely.
What do you suggest?
A lot of night games.
Oh, and the no drinking and the no smoking and the no sex. All part of the same rules.
Yeah.
They have to move gracefully and grandfully.
And like balance gracefully. A book on their head.
Yes. And then sip, don't slurp.
I like sip, the when she's like, there should be two eyebrows, not one.
Yeah. They're like, and then when they get to Marla, they're like, oh my God.
A lot of night games.
Yeah.
Right. Poor Marla. But she does somehow survive this this round. But now, what did they suggest? A lot of night games?
Right? Yeah.
That was so we meet Gary Marshall now. I don't know how Penny Marshall got him to be in the movie. But so he's showing Jimmy around. This is our introduction to Tom Hanks's character. And Jimmy is just... You know, he is asked if he's still falling down drunk. It's pretty clear he is.
Uh-huh. Enough socializing. Jimmy, I'm thinking of giving you another managing job.
Oh, well, Mr.
Harvey, I guarantee you that I'll do a better job than last time.
You kind of let me down on that San Antonio job.
I freely admit, sir, I had no right to sell off the team's equipment like that. That won't happen again.
Let me be blunt. Are you still a fall-down drunk?
Well, that is blunt. No, sir, I've quit drinking.
You've seen the error of your ways.
No, I just can't afford it.
It's funny to you. Your drinking is funny. You're a young man, Jimmy. You still could be playing if you just would have laid off the booze.
Well, it's not exactly like that. I hurt my knee.
You fell out of a hotel. That's how you hurt it.
There was a fire.
Which you started, which I had to pay for.
Well, no, I was going to send you a thank you card, Mr. Harvey, but I wasn't allowed anything sharp to write with.
Look, Jimmy, I want you to manage one of the new girls' baseball teams. Don't look so stunned. Face it. You're still a name. You step out of the dugout before every game. You wave your little hat in the air. You give the people a thrill.
Why don't we just get an organ grinder? I can hop around and do a little dance.
If your knees are up to it, go ahead.
Yeah, he's a wreck. And Gary Marshall says something about, well, he could have still had a baseball career if he had just laid off the booze. Although a little bit later on, he also has a career-ending injury as well.
A knee injury, right?
Yeah, he stopped because he hurt his knee, and he said, well, you hurt your knee falling out of a hotel because you lit it on fire. So, yeah, but Gary Marshall needs him to manage the Rockford Peaches. So, what's he going to do? He needs money. And this is the only game, literally the only game in town for him. I love Tom Hanks in this role. It's really cool to see him in a supporting role at this stage in his career, and I think he crushes this.
Crushes it.
And he's just having a blast.
Job.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Moving on.
We got a lot to cover.
We do have a lot. So the girls are now excited to meet their new manager, Jimmy, the great Jimmy Dugan. And he shows up real drunk to this first meeting. Like, he literally, like, lurches past them into the urinal.
He tears up the baseball card of
himself. Yeah, the girl
of Betty. What's her name?
Yes.
Betty Spaghetti.
Betty Spaghetti, yep. Yeah.
Which isn't interesting because she says it's my husband's card. And yeah.
Who's that in war?
And he's the one who passes away later.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
And he stops to take an epic pee.
And watch Madonna times.
Yeah.
It was something like 53 seconds. And what the IMDb trivia said is that even Tom Hanks didn't know how long the pee was going to go. And that so he's standing there doing whatever. And Penny Marshall is in the stall next to him with just a hose and just making the noises and going. And so he just had to sort of keep acting it out until she felt like being done, which is pretty funny.
That is fun.
I find this hilarious and stupidly so. There's something, it's just a long water noise, but it gets me.
It does.
I don't know why.
I like Madonna in this scene. She's shut up, Doris. And she's filming. Yeah. I know a line from every part of this movie. Stay with me here.
So now we get to the first game, and it's very clear Jimmy thinks his job is to just be a part of a dog and pony show. He goes out there, he waves his hat around, and then basically passes out in the dugout.
And he doesn't tell them what order they're going to play in.
He does nothing.
Dottie has to step up because he's not managing the team at all. Because is he drunk? He's still drunk.
Oh, he's definitely drunk.
Yeah.
He's a drunk. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's some person just heckling them that girls can't play ball, which is weird that he bought a ticket to do that. But he's heckling them. So is it Dottie beans the heckler or somebody?
No, it's Ellen Sue.
Ellen Sue. Yeah. Beans him. And so there's just getting nothing from Jimmy, but Dottie hits a homer and they win the game 5-2. No thanks to Jimmy being useless. I believe in the next scene, Ira, David Strathairn comes in and says, oh, I really like the part where you scratched your balls for an hour. Great line.
And then he said good night and good luck.
Yes, then he said good night and good luck. And then almost was Stanley Tucci. I think they're very similar looking actors. Anyway, he says, I couldn't tell if you were drunk or dead, and Hanks just fires back, I haven't got baseball players, I've got girls. You sleep with them after the game, not coach them during the game. So, yeah. I love characters like this who they start off as just irredeemable and then find a way to redeem them. Okay, so we get another newsreel. So it's been a month. And this is the, ooh, look how sexy they are. Here's Betty Spaghetti. Kit is as single as they come, he says. And then we get our photography moment. How about that Marla Hooch from a thousand miles away? Pretty fun. I like these newsreels. They really help kind of move things along, which is what it's for. And they win their next game. And we get to this thing where who's Stillwell's mom? Which one of the players is that?
Ellen Stillwell Angel?
Evelyn.
Okay. Yeah.
Biddy Schramm.
Yeah. She tells Jimmy, we haven't met Stillwell yet, but she says, oh, my son needs to come along on this baseball tour with us. We'll meet him in a second. Which is really funny, that this whole thing of him just running up and down the bus and nearly getting everyone killed.
Well, he's the sweetest little boy. Everyone's just gonna love him.
Blinding the bus driver, putting his hands over the bus, and not that a single person stopping him.
That little fucker kid. I swear to God, I hated that kid.
Oh, he's
Stillwell Angel.
Why is his name Stillwell? I don't understand that. That's not a name.
So, and she calls him Stillwell Angel.
Yeah.
Stillwell sounds like the name of like kind of a 70s rock band. Yeah. More than a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the name of the band in
Almost Famous?
Yeah.
It's close. Stillwater, I think, is what it's called, right? Stillwater? I know their hit song Fever Dog. That's what I remember from that. So yeah, so they chase Stillwell off the bus. And so they're kind of like waylaid for a while after their driver calls it quits. And they decide, well, we'll just go off to the suds bucket then.
But the driver also, when he's throwing his fit, and what's the escort's name? The chaperone? Oh, he like throws chaperone, right? Like a mud patty in her face. So when she gets off the bus, gets back on the bus, she's like covered in mud and is like, Mr. Whatever is not joining us any longer. And she's like trying to be all professional with like mud down her face.
Yeah. And then didn't she go and try to wake up Tom Hanks's character, and then they make out for a second.
He grabs her and kisses her. Yeah,
plants. He grabs her and kisses her, and then it was like, oh, gross.
Well, he finally comes to out of his stupor, yeah. Sees what he's, and they both just start screaming. It's really funny. This is, yeah, I love like Tom Hanks comedy of this era, like this big, like, you know, Splash, like this era of his career. Like, this is him doing that stuff as well as he's ever done it.
And it's perfect.
Yeah. So they decide to go off to the suds bucket. So May is going to not only, she's going to give food poisoning to the chaperone so that she'll be out of commission while they go. And they sneak off to the suds bucket, which is this awesome, fun scene of them just dancing it up 40s style. And we get these nice character beats between them all starting to bond.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It's such a fun, you get to see Madonna. I think it's Madonna dancing. Doing like a fun dance. And it looks like she's doing it all herself.
Yeah, and her dance partner was on Laverne and Shirley with Penny Marshall, and his character on Laverne and Shirley was a dance instructor.
Oh, that's fun.
I read all the IMDb trivia.
Yeah, you really did it, the IMDb today.
Good job. This is where we hear that Doris was the bouncer and May was the exotic dancer, and that's how they met. A 10-year-old propositions Dottie, who is coming to find Kit.
Why don't you come and make me a man or something like that?
Yeah, and Dottie's not really there to have fun. She's there to just warn everybody that Ira is on his way and they need to get home so they don't get caught out, having a good time here. But they can't leave because Marla Hooch is singing to Nelson.
No, listen, it's Lowenstein. He's on his way here. He catches us, we're out of the league, okay?
All right, let's make like a bread truck and hold buns, ladies.
See you, mate.
Wait, let's duck out the back door. Hey, is this all of you? Marla didn't come?
She came.
Yeah, well, where is she? Better be glad just there. To be sad. Thinking of you. Some others I've seen, might never be.
What did you do to her?
Well, not that we just gave her a dress
and a lot of liquor.
Never be cross.
All right, you guys, go ahead. I'll get more.
Hurry up, ladies.
Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you. It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around.
Marla, we gotta go. Come on, we gotta go.
I sing it to Nelson, ain't I, baby?
You sure are.
Marla, come on.
No!
I could take her home. It'd be an honor.
Ain't he something could make me?
It had to be you. It had to be you.
Isn't that song in another Tom Hanks movie? Isn't that in Sleepless in Seattle?
It might be, yeah. Yeah, that is a...
It's a random callback.
It's a funny... That's yeah. Who doesn't love it? I'm singing a Nelson, baby.
Baby.
You sure are.
He's familiar looking. Nelson? Is he somebody? Fact check, please, Tanya.
I'm working on it.
All right. Yeah, it's actually very sweet. Like he is totally enraptured this awful rendition of It Had to Be.
Yeah, and he doesn't look like he's drunk. She's definitely drunk, but he seems like he's sober. So that's kind of cute.
There's a lid for every pot.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
He was in Child's Play. He was in Home Alone at the airport.
What's his name?
Alan Wilder.
No, not at all. I think he just has like a face that looks like it's been in a lot of movies. Looks familiar.
Yeah, he's got a pretty decent, IMDb. It goes back pretty far.
And then he offers to take her home. I could drive her. Something like that.
Yeah, Nelson is a pure soul.
He's adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the girls go to confession and May says... enough dirty stuff to make the priest drop his Bible twice.
I always wondered if, like, they did something. They made it look like she, like, reached through the window somehow and, like, did something. Because he just comes out looking really guilty.
Oh, I think he just hears all of her sexcapades and is just shocked.
Yeah. Again, feeding into Madonna's persona off screen at this time.
I mean, especially. That's what I said. It's like Madonna playing herself. You know, this is Madonna, personified here.
This is the height of, like, Justify My Love and, like, the cone bra, like, super, sexualized Madonna. Yeah.
Right.
And is this her first movie?
Seeking Susan or something.
Who's that girl? What about that?
Dick Tracy was around this time too, okay. I think.
Wasn't Desperately Seeking Susan or something? I thought that was more of the first.
Oh, wow.
That was 85. Desperately Seeking Susan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she would have been like 30. My guess is she was like a 1955. Am I right, Tanya? She didn't look like, so she would have been over 30 when this was
58. So she's a year younger than my mom. So
she would have been about 32 when League of Their Own, something like that.
Okay. So we get a quick shot of Jimmy just kind of hitting dingers and talking to himself before we get back to game time, and we see May hits this huge triple against Racine, and we hear for the first time she's now got the moniker All the Way May.
They love her.
Dottie is trying to give signals to to Marla, who's at bat. Jimmy is trying to give competing signals, and this is just a really funny, it's a visual gag of them yanking on their faces, trying to tell poor Marla what they want her to do.
I have never been able to follow the signals that they do, where I think Dottie says it's based on, like, if you point at your nose, I think I understand that to be N, and then when they point at the ear, is it E? I have, for however, 35 years, still cannot figure out what words they're trying to signal.
So your kids don't have signs in your leagues yet?
We don't use the nose and the ear. We use a couple of these.
These for the podcast listeners would be middle fingers.
Yeah. I've never understood I understand how signs work, but I can't imagine remembering, like, this time it means this, but this time it means, like,
right.
I don't know how they remember that.
And I would assume maybe it's different for different teams. So,
oh, yeah. There's no consistency. Yeah. Well,
the Houston Astros have made a career out of stealing signs and winning World Series. So you can ask them.
I'll make a note to do that.
What's your team, Ryan? Are you the St. Louis? Are you the Cardinals? Are they?
I used to be the Angels, but they are so bad that, I'm the Cardinals now.
Yeah.
Okay. That was Sammy's team last year.
Oh.
And now he's the Dodgers. No, Fig is the Dodgers.
Sammy's the Rangers.
Yeah. Oh. I just made Dodgers colors for earrings.
Ooh. I asked you for Dodgers and Rangers.
What's Rangers? Oh, that's
blue and red.
Blue and red. Okay, well, I got that.
Yeah, but the importance of the scene is this is the first time Jimmy's actually engaged in coaching the team at all.
Yeah, he kind of has, he makes some, like, facial expressions like, oh, like, they're making plays. They actually are decent. He seems like he's starting to get slightly invested.
Right.
Is this when we haven't gotten to Girls Don't Cry in Baseball.
Oh, no, we'll camp out on that.
And then there's another
minute.
Part that he, like, he, like, holds it together.
Yes, there's a couple
just
of really...
some fun facial acting from him.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah. Oh, and he doesn't,
We're almost there, by the way. But we go back to them, they're on the bus, and this is where we get that scene of May teaching Shirley how to read via porn. Another girl is writing a song. Well, I think we'll hear the song later. So we also hear about Doris's boyfriend, and I like this joke, that is the picture out of focus? And she's like, no, that's what he looks like. Which is like, he's blurry? He's a blurry man.
He's just moving that much.
And he showed interest when nobody else would, but she is convinced that this guy is beneath her, and she wisely tears up his picture and is done with him.
Well, I think that goes to, like, the heart of this movie and that sisterhood element is that, you know, she's like, well, I was with him because none of the other boys liked me because I was, you know, too big or too tough or whatever, but he's an asshole. And I think through this process of being on this team and being valued, she finds more value in herself, which is why she's like, screw it. I'm dumping. What's his name? Eddie?
I think.
Whatever his name is, asshole. But, you know, she chops up the photo and says bye. But I think that's a big part of it. That's you start to slowly see, like you said, with, like, Madonna teaching the illiterate woman to read, they're bringing each other up. Mm-hmm. And they're giving each other some self-worth that they didn't have at home, which I think goes back to the point of Kit. I've got nothing here. Where she's got the world, you know, she's got this opens up, and we learn this more and more, is this league gives her the world. And these are just really tiny little elements that, you know, that give us that sneak peek into what these women, the potential they didn't have at home.
Yeah.
No, exactly. I think that is what's one of the more, I think, compelling emotional through lines through this is, yeah, they're them pulling themselves up into a world where, like, yeah, they are so constantly being compared to men because they're doing this quote unquote man's job. And having to be like, no, we're good on our own terms, both as athletes and as human beings. And yeah, you watch them all evolve through that in different ways, but all of the major characters we get to meet kind of go through some growth in that department. It's yeah, one of the most heartening things about this very heartwarming movie. But now we're going to get to something that's not very heartwarming, which is the next game, Ellen biffs it. And this is where Jimmy tears her a new one, causing her to cry, oh, and him to say one of the most famous lines.
Evelyn.
Is it Evelyn? Oh,
I have Ellen Sue is the model one.
Oh, shoot. I had in my notes as Ellen. All right. Well, regardless, he's about to say one of the most famous lines in any movie as he tells her, there is no crying in baseball.
Say, Evelyn, can I ask you a question? You got a moment?
Mm-hmm. Which team do you play for?
Well, I'm a peach.
Well, I was just wondering, because I couldn't figure out why you would throw home when we've got a two-run lead. You let the tying run get on second, and we lost the lead because of you. Now you start using your head. That's that love that's 3 feet above your ass. Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Why don't you leave her alone, Jimmy?
Oh, you zip it, Doris. Rogers Hornsby was my manager, and he called me a talking pile of pig shit. And that was when my parents drove all the way down from Michigan to see me play the game. And did I cry?
No.
No. No. And you know why?
No.
Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
What's the matter, Jimmy?
What? She's crying, sir.
I didn't mean to do that.
Perhaps you chastise her too vehemently. Good rule of thumb. Treat each of these girls as you would treat your mother.
Anyone ever tell you look like a penis with a little hat on?
You're out of here!
Oh, no,
right
no, no,
now,
no,
Jimmy,
you,
I heard
you
that!
Misunderstood.
There's no crying in baseball.
There's no crying in baseball?
Yeah, and the redemption for him is that when the umpire calls him out on being too mean, he says he looks like a penis with a hat on and gets thrown out of the game. That's how he kind of goes back up in the girls' eyes to do that.
No, because I think then he gets thrown out and, like, Doris is like, yep, get out. Like, no, get out. You're an asshole to your team. You know, so, like, they're still clearly working through their dynamics.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, this scene is kind of taken on a life of its own, you know, beyond the movie. I mean, other than just sort of being a funny moment, I was trying to think of, like, why has this particular scene been so standout over time?
I don't know, but I've been quoting it since college. I mean, like, my friends, yeah.
It's a really catchy line.
And again, like what Amy was saying about just, like, the facial expressions, it's sort of just this moment, you know, where like the lightning in a bottle where they're just, you know, he is just so good in his part, you know, Tom Hanks is Jimmy and just the frustration. It's funny.
And there is no crying in baseball.
Well, I think also this shows lesson. Like he's so used to being around men in baseball that I think that he constantly has to remind himself, oh, these are women, these are women, these are women. And he, from that point on, you can see that there's kind of a change in him where he's a lot more cognizant of what he's saying to these women. And I think that there where she breaks down, I see a change in him in the movie. going forward. Because there's a point where Evelyn does something stupid again, and he wants to say something to her so badly, and he just kind of swallows his thought.
Right.
Right. Is this where he says something about, he talks about at some point that he was essentially berated like this by his coaches, yeah. And you know, use your head. That's that lump that's 3 feet above your ass, right? That is that here, or I can't remember if that's here or somewhere else.
Yeah.
So and my parents were in the stands.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
So, you know, it's clear in his mind that like this way of talking to other people is acceptable and normal, especially in baseball. And, you know, we'll see him grow out of that.
Yeah.
So now we get to a different problem that the girls face, which is their next game against Racine. There's not much of a crowd. And this has been kind of lurking in the background, which is that like the league has not taken off in popularity. And there's a concern that if they can't get butts in the stands, then the whole thing's going to shut down. And this is where Dottie, you know, they want a story about Dottie, the Queen of Diamonds, and how she rescued her sister. And they wanted to give him something spectacular. May's worried she's going to have to go back to dancing. So Dottie decides to do a splits and catch a ball. And this is the beginning of, yeah, the Harlem Globetrotter stuff they have to do while they play baseball.
Right. Yeah, there's one that she, like, catches behind her back, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a fun one.
Yeah. And it's not just like on the field, like during the game either, because we're about to go into this montage of them doing this kind of stuff. And there was one where they have to like catch a ball and you get in the stands and you get a kiss from the players. Like, you know, anything they can do to like, you know, drum up interest. You know, if there was a rally monkey back then, they'd have a rally monkey, you know, whatever it would be to just like make it more of an event. I think is it Madonna says, what if my uniform bursts open and my bosoms come flying out?
And they're like, there's no one who hasn't seen your bosom. Something like that.
But this is where we get to, we mentioned this a while ago, but this is where Marla drops out of the movie. She marries Nelson and she's off. And I was trying to think of why they do this here. Like, when I first saw the movie, I thought, oh, well, this is a historical movie. I guess the real Marla Hooch actually dropped out halfway through the season, and that's why. Nope, Marla Hooch is a fictional character.
Right.
So, I'm curious to hear if you have any thoughts on why you think that they have her bow out at this point.
I mean, I would just say, I think it again, it's just another element of growth that these women find these experiences. They take life, you know, by the horn. She finds this love that you find out later in the movie, they, you know, that they were together till the end, until he died a couple years later or something. You know, where it was, it's the jumping off point for all of these people and how they, these women, and that offering them lives they weren't going to get at home. And right. Especially for her, I'm so sorry, Ryan.
Right.
Just especially for her with like how the beginning of the movie was, and she's so, you know, I guess homely and boy, tomboyish, and you know, she finds a man who is a good man and just takes this option, you know, and says later, I'll be back next season. And you learn at the end of the movie, she, you know, she clearly did come back and play.
Yeah, it's all she knew was baseball, and she was presented this other opportunity to marry somebody, which she probably wouldn't have gotten at home. So
I think the overall point is that all these women's lives were definitely enriched by being a part of this baseball league. And I think that had they not been a part of it, their lives would have gone very, very differently.
I also think it's important that Dottie watches this happen, because her dilemma towards the end of the movie is going to be, oh, my husband is home. Should I do what Marla did and peace out now? You know, is that more important to me than playing this game? And, you know, so I do think it does serve that purpose, even though they don't necessarily draw the, like, most obvious line between this happening and Dottie's dilemma later. But I do think it helps. You know, this is in the back of your mind of like, oh, yeah, Marla, you know, got married and left.
I think that Dottie, though, and we'll get to this later, Dottie's decision to leave is more based on Betty's husband loss than it is of Marla's leaving.
Well, it compounds it, right? It's like, this, that's all in her head. So we have a quick montage again. Now the crowds are starting to get bigger, more flashy moves from them. And we're back on the bus. And this is where we kind of get this heartfelt moment between Jimmy and Donnie as she talks about, you know, her husband's off at war and she hasn't gotten a letter from him in 3 weeks. And Jimmy tries to, you know, cheer her up, you know, tell her it's going to be okay. But she says, when Bob comes back, I'll quit.
He's good looking.
What does he do when he's not in the army?
He's assistant manager at the dairy. He's going to be manager someday. He's real smart.
He's just good looking and smart. There's so few of us. What did you say he was again? Italy?
Yeah, I think. I mean, I haven't got a letter from him in 3 weeks. I used to get one every week.
Hmm. Well, that doesn't mean anything. You know, if he's in combat, it's not like there's a mailbox in every corner.
When?
Besides, if something had happened, he would have got one of those telegrams.
Oh, God, it does.
Oh, but he's fine. No, he's fine. He's fine.
How come you're not in the army?
I have no cartilage. In my knee, not that you need cartilage to shoot Nazis. I need this, right? Trigger finger. I could do that. How did I get so useless so fast?
And he says, well, you play like you love it. Don't you know, does Bob know how good you are at baseball? You're the best player in the league. And I love this because this is like Jimmy's really being a human being now. And it's not like there's a romance between him and Dottie, but the relationship they do have is, I think, it gets pretty deep. And, you know, like they clearly have an incredible amount of respect for each other by the end of the movie. So, yeah.
It seems like she's able to bond more with Jimmy than she is with her other girl players. And I don't know if that's just...
I think she's able to bond with him better than her own sister.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know why that is.
Maybe, and he's not necessarily... Well, he's acting more mature now, but he certainly wasn't earlier in the film. So I don't know why she's able to bond so well with him. But obviously they have...
They get on, yeah. They just have a special bond. It's not necessarily... You're right. You know, sometimes you just click with someone. Mm-hmm. And that's the person that, you know... People have their, like, work bestie. As much as everybody's friends, this is kind of her work bestie.
Yeah.
And, right, but he also clearly respects her, and I think, in particular, far more than the other women. And so they have, I think they kind of understand each other on a different level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we circle back to the Dottie and Kit dynamic, because we get this scene where Kit is pitching and... struggling pretty hard, so Jimmy is debating, do we take her out of the game and let someone else finish? Mm-hmm. Kit wants to finish, and Jimmy unwisely just sort of defers to Dottie and says, you know, what do you think we should do? And Dottie has the honest assessment of...
She's throwing watermelons. Oh, grapefruits.
Yeah.
She's throwing grapefruits. She needs to come out of the game.
Run!
Whoa! Hurler.
Kid Keller
looks mighty tired.
Game's getting pretty exciting.
Finish right here. I'll strike the turkey out.
Yeah, Betty Spaghetti already come in.
Come on, coach. I've never been taken out before. Ask Dottie. I really want to finish this game, Jimmy. Please.
What do you think?
Well, you know, she's battling.
What do you think?
She's done. She's thrown grapefruit at me.
Whoa!
Whoa! It looks like Keller's coming out of the ball game, and she is not happy about it.
And you know, this is absolutely crushing to Kit. And so this is one of those things where I thought, like, you know, I get that she recognizes her sister probably needs to come out of the game, but maybe there was a better way.
Well, so another trivia that I read was that back then in the 40s, it was uncommon to be taken out of a game, that as opposed to now where you have all these relief pitchers, things like that. That was not a common practice. So to be taken out of the game was also incredibly insulting. So I think that's just an added layer to the, you know, the sister element. You're also, this doesn't happen normally.
No, I was going to say, that's come a lot of that, what Tanya said is true. And that's come from advancements in pitch count, because not that I'm going to get technical here, but when you throw over 100 pitches a game, that's usually when you're taken out, no matter where in modern day baseball. Can be even lower than that. And modern day baseball is so much different. So Tanya's right. This is very, to be taken out here when pitch count wasn't a huge, as big of a deal as it is today, was very, very, very strange. Because most pitchers pitch the whole game.
And as the newest Huntington West scorekeeper, I can tell you that for a 6 or 7 year old, the pitch count we max out at 30 or 35.
Yeah.
So they, you know, yeah, you're right. I think that health, that physical sports health aspect.
You know, I just had a thought that if this is, and we'll go back to the pitching because I do have another comment on that, but if this is the American League, then Kit shouldn't be batting. When did that change? Because normally in the American League, pitchers don't, they're not at bat. There's a, what's it called? A pinch hitter or like a designated hitter. Yeah.
Right. But this isn't the American League. I don't think this is the American League, a modern American League.
No,
this
I think it just, changed. Yeah.
It's
yeah,
a holy set. Yeah. It's the, technically, yeah. It's the All-American Girls Baseball League.
Right. Okay. So there right. wouldn't be an American League and a National League.
No, they're all this part is of just, the same.
There's only like four teams, really. So.
Right. Yeah. And that's a modern day where, I mean, a lot of these rules, like the American League and the National League being different, happened a lot later on, like the, I don't know, 60s or 70s.
It just seems like, I mean, if I had to pick, I'd rather pick then the American League, because it's like, if I'm a pitcher, I can focus in on just being a really good pitcher and not have to worry about also being a good hitter.
Or a belly itcher.
Right. The other thing I was going to say just about when they took Kit out of the game was, while Dottie is the catcher and could weigh in, I think that just puts, it makes the situation harder for Kit. Like that, Tom Hanks should maybe have just made the decision on his own. He didn't have to put Dottie in the middle of it. And it just compounded that relation. I mean, it obviously is the catalyst for the rest of the movie and it had to happen that way. But just knowing their dynamic, I don't know that that was the right coach move.
No, it isn't the catcher's decision. It is Jimmy's decision as the manager. And Dottie's only been kind of a de facto manager while Jimmy has been a useless drunk, which he is coming out of now. So they do go, they win this game, which means they go on to win the playoffs, which again, I don't know how that works with only four teams anyway to make the playoffs. Eventually there were 10 teams in the league, but at this point in 1943, there were only four. But against this, like cutting with this, is this scene of Harvey and Ira talking about the future of the league, and Harvey's basically saying, "Hey, man, this is fine and all, but we're going to go back to men next year, and we won't need these women anymore." And you get this impassioned speech from Ira about, you know, "Hey, this is all these women have. They put their asses on the line for this. They've done, you know, they've done everything you asked and more, and they're succeeding. You know, don't take this away from them." It's a really great moment in the movie to have him, you know, go to bat for them. And I think that sweetly comes kind of full circle when you see him at the very elderly Ira at the end of the movie. And he says, like, "Oh, I'll make it up to them." And he goes, "With what? You know, chocolate bars?" You know, it's really sweet. But from here we go to this post-mortem where, you know, Kit and Doris end up in a fight in the locker room. Like, the bad vibes from taking Kit out of the game just kind of spill into the locker room later.
This is where Jimmy throws her down into the shower and puts on the shower when she's still wearing her clothes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
And this, so Kit tells her sister, "You treat me like a baby." And she said, "I treated you like a player." And she says, "You could have had my back instead of holding me back. It's not like, you know, you're here and then I'm not. It's like you're here and then I'm not here." And she just literally says to her sister, "Why do you got to be so good?"
You know, right. Yeah. Dottie is never going to win when Kit is feeling like a victim. That's really what it comes down to, no matter what Dottie would have done, because like she said, I was treating you like a ball player and not like a sister. So this is the one time, you know, where all she does is wants to be treated separate and not be her sister, not be compared to her or have any special treatment. And the one time, you know, Dottie tries to treat her like an adult or whatever you want to say is, oh, you couldn't be my sister about this. She's never going to win in whatever choice Dottie makes. And I think that also goes into that calculus about going home. She needs to, she's sacrificing, you know, what could be an amazing future for her so that her sister can have something that's separate. And the you know, it just goes back to the same thing about she's doing a lot of this is for her sister. And that goes into a lot of the decisions she makes.
I mean, it is a no-win situation in a way for Dottie, because if she helps her sister, then her sister goes, you know, you're helping me, but I'm not earning this on my own, right? I'm not doing this under my own steam because you're just giving me a leg up and, you know, that's, you're taking away my agency. If she doesn't help her sister, then her sister comes at her, then Kit says, how come you're not helping me? So there is really sort of, in a way, no way for her to win this. But that doesn't make necessarily Dottie always right and Kit's always wrong either. Because obviously there's, I still think there has to be a door number three where their relationship isn't damaged this much. But yeah, I'll let Amy, you have some thoughts on this, I can tell.
I'm good.
Oh, all right, good. Save some time. Ryan, any thoughts on the scene before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. So we're, Ira finds Dottie and she says she wants to leave. She doesn't want to talk about it, but she says, trade me or whatever, but work it out by tomorrow. And we'll find out what he comes up with tomorrow in a bit, which is, they're back at the hotel. And May is complaining that her dress is too tight, to which Doris replies, why do you even bother getting dressed at all? Which is great.
It's a cute dress. By the way.
Yeah. But the scene
very
is
cute.
Yeah. But the scene is immediately interrupted by Kit bursting into the room, you know, furious because she's been traded to Racine.
And she catches the ball, which is a good callback.
Where's Dottie?
In there.
Well, Glenn, you want to go to the movies with me?
You want to go with me?
Oh, bitch!
What?
I've been traded to Racine.
You? I told him to trade me.
Oh, yeah, they'd really trade you. Miss Star, Miss Perfect. You know exactly what was going to happen the whole time.
I didn't. This will be better than this.
Come on.
I'll quit, okay? I'll quit. Is that what you want me to do?
Sure, then everybody will blame me for you quitting.
Well, what do you want me to do? I'll do it.
Stay away from me. Just leave me alone. That's what I want you to do.
Kit, listen to me. It was all a mistake, okay? It was a big mistake.
I was getting too good, wasn't I?
Listen.
I knew if I did too good, you'd do something to push me down.
Hey, Kit, blow it out your rear end. I am so sick of being blamed for everything that's bothering you. I got you into this league, goddammit.
You got her in the league.
I didn't even want to be here.
Then why are you still here? My train leaves at 8:00. I got 10 minutes to pack.
Well, if you have any trouble, you know who to blame.
I'll see you in the World Series.
Yeah, you bet you will. Don't look at her. Don't look at her. Has anyone seen my new red hat? Oh, piss on your hat. Well, that seemed uncalled for.
Yeah.
The girls are practicing in the house, and Kit catches the ball with her hands.
Right. And she is furious. You know, Dottie tries to explain that she was the one, she meant that she wanted to be traded, not Kit. She says something like, Kit says, I was getting too good, wasn't I? And so now this is like a different gripe that, like, you know, you had to, you're actively holding me back as opposed to just outshining me, which is not true, but she's not going to let her sister talk. And, you know, she just storms out, basically. Piss on your hat.
And then they fight, and the girls are whispering in the hall. She says she got her into the league, and they whisper it down like, she says she got her into the league.
I frankly think
this is like the one time that Dottie tries to fight back and is sick of it and is sick of just taking her shit and is actually going to say some of the things that, you know, the kind of the hurtful, the sort of mean things that you think under your breath, or, you know, that you don't say out loud. And she was just sick and tired of sort of, I guess, babying her sister. And finally kind of...
Good for her.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, Kit is
a bit... Kit needs a smack in the head a little bit. Like, not everybody can, like, constantly pander to Kit being, like, feeling like she's below everybody. And I feel like Kit needs to figure that out on her own. It's not up to Dottie.
Yeah.
Although I actually think for them, it's the best thing to do to split them up.
100%.
Put them on a different team. I think there's self-growth on both ends.
I also think it was, I mean, I get why Ira wouldn't move Dottie, but you think no other team wouldn't have been thrilled to have Dottie and been like, she's the Queen of Diamonds. She can be the Queen of Diamonds on any fucking team. It didn't matter that she had to stay there. So, you know, when Ira is trying to change them up, when she asked for the solution, you know, she was still thinking about her sister the whole time. She was still trying to figure out. And so there's also that element of, I don't know exactly what that element is, but the calculus in making the decision that Kit be transferred is just interesting.
Yeah, we're not privy to how that decision gets made. You know,
right. It makes more sense if it was like the managers having the conversation and like Jimmy being unwilling to give her up.
Because maybe it is the Jimmy part. Maybe that she's keeping Jimmy functional. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, and we don't know that, like, obviously someone else pitches in for, plays catcher for Dottie when she's not there. And we don't know, that, like, oh, well, hey, you know, we can, if we lose Dottie, the other catcher isn't very good. But if we lose Kit, the other pitcher can pick up the slack better. You know, we don't know any of those kinds of stats that are driving this decision.
Well, so. we do meet the other catcher later on when this decision is made. And they make her seem like she's kind of, looks sloppy.
A little rough around the edges. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is where now we get the song, the theme song, which is in fact the real theme song for the real All-American Girls Baseball League.
Okay.
They did change something. I think they say like Irish ones and Swedes instead of Irish men. They changed some minor thing like that. But yes, they have all different kinds of whites on their team. Still segregated. It is still 1943. That's actually kind of a big factor in the League of Their Own TV series. They do address that a bit. There's some African-American characters that cannot obviously join the main league.
They have one frame in this one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't there a black lady in this in League of Their Own at some point who was really good at baseball?
Like the ball got hit into the outfield where the segregated section is, and the black woman like throws it past Dottie into the beauty queen's arms, and she's like, ow, like, because it had so much force. And that was apparently their commentary, because by this point Jackie Robinson, again, IMDb trivia, I guess it said that at this point Jackie Robinson had already
integrated baseball,
but they still, for the women, they weren't doing it. So this was there, that's at least sort of commentary or acknowledgement that at that time.
Yeah, she gives the lady like a knowing kind of nod. It was like, hey, one fight at a time, you know.
Yeah,
I guess. So they sing the song, and this is where we get a telegram from the War Department. In this harrowing moment where, like, every married woman in that dugout is wondering, is it, you know, which one of us is it?
All right, everybody, let's listen up. Now, listen up. Something important has just happened. I was in the toilet reading my contract, and it turns out I get a bonus when we get to the World Series. So, let's play hard. Let's play smart. Use your head.
I said lump 3 feet above our ass, right, Jimmy?
Well, some more prominent than others there, Doris. Come in. Excuse me? I got a telegram from one of you ladies from the War Department.
Oh, my God, Ernie.
Let's see. Boy, I hate these. These are the worst. At least the Army could do is send someone personally. Tell your husband's dead. Darn, I had the name right here. Well, now I got to go back and get this straightened out. Sorry.
Hey, just give me the telegram.
I can't. I don't have a name on the checklist.
Just give me the telegram.
Hey, this is official. This is from the War Department. Come on. That's official business. I'm coming back.
Sorry, Betty.
No, John!
And I love the, like, just the cruelty of this, like, dopey, you know, telegram guy. Just oh, Mr. Butterfingers, which one is it? Oh, they always mess this up. And finally, Jimmy has to, like, snatch it out of his hand. To, like,
and just give it to me, yeah.
Yeah, and it's Betty Spaghetti's husband.
Who's sitting next to Gina Davis, who thought it was her husband.
It's such a heartbreaking scene.
Oh,
because it comes out of nowhere. Also, they've had all this other fun stuff and this other drama that you almost forget for a hot second that we're also in the middle of World War II.
And then a lot of them have husbands that are fighting either in the Pacific or the European theater. So yeah, that's, and it happened all the time. I mean, there was constant, the War Department, you know, how many U.S. soldiers died in World War II. A lot.
Yeah. And we're about to get the flip side of that scene, because in the very next scene, Bob comes home.
Right.
Hey, cutie. How did you...
Oh, Bob! Oh, my God! Bob, what happened?
Oh, I'm fine.
What is it?
It was a sniper. I was lucky, though. He got seven of us before we got him.
Oh, sweetie. Oh, sweetie.
It's all right. I mean it.
I missed you so much.
I've been discharged.
I didn't think I'd ever see you again.
It's all over. I'm here, baby.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, you have to sit down here with me. Clear all this stuff off.
I almost forgot how beautiful you are.
Oh, no, I look terrible.
You look beautiful. You're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
I love you. Can we just hold each other for the rest of our lives?
That's my plan.
Again, Bill Pullman and his third appearance on the podcast this year. We did Independence Day and Spaceballs. So a lot of Bill Pullman lately.
Friend
of the pod, Bill Pullman. Right. It's a sweet scene of their, you know, them reuniting. And I like that Bob is not encouraging her to, like, leave the team. He's, you know, especially when it's like they're in the World Series, there's, like, you know, a handful of games left, you know, and she's like, I'm out, I'm done, that's it.
We don't really get much of their, I don't think they show much of their conversation, right? She just decides, you know, they kiss and all that, and then the next scene it's like she's like, I'm driving home. So we don't know what their dynamic is, but I don't think it was him. I think it was Dottie.
I think it was all her.
Oh, yeah. No, they don't give you any indication that Bill Pullman is like, you know, well, now that I'm home, this whole baseball nonsense is over. No. Like, they don't do any of that.
No.
I do like in this scene where they're, you know, they're hopping in the car to leave. Just before we get to that, Jimmy is signing a baseball for somebody and he writes, the signature is avoid the clap. It's really funny.
Yeah.
So, you know, he tries to talk Dottie into it and he says, you know, I lost 5 years of my baseball career to drinking, and I would give anything to have, you know, just to get it back to play one more game. And, you know, and this is where she says it got too hard, and he says, well, the hard is what makes it great.
You know, I really thought you were a ball player.
Well, you were wrong.
Was I?
Yeah. It is only a game, Jimmy. It's only a game, and I don't need this. I have Bob. I don't need this. I don't.
I gave away 5 years at the end of my career to drinking. 5 years. And now there isn't anything I wouldn't give to get back any one day of it.
Well, we're different.
Chicken shit, Dottie. You want to go back home to Oregon and make 100 babies? Great. I'm in no position to tell anyone how to live. But sneaking out like this, quitting, you regret it for the rest of your life. Baseball is what gets inside you. It's what lights you up. You can't deny that.
It just got too hard.
It's supposed to be hard. If it wasn't hard, everyone would do it. The hard is what makes it great.
So now the World Series starts, and we kind of get between Rockford and Racine, and we go through this quick montage where the series gets tied up 3-3, with no Dottie, of course, playing. And there's a few little things in here. One, I noticed that Doris's dad, we see him come in and buy a ticket to watch the game, even though Marla is presumably not playing. But that's kind of sweet.
No, it's Doris's dad. It's Rosie O'Donnell's dad.
I'm sorry, it's Doris's dad. You're right. That makes sense.
And he's like, I'm going to take her out for a steak dinner after. And he's so excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cute. So now we're game seven. We get this locker room pep talk from Jimmy to lead the girls at a prayer, which is pretty funny. Just, may their feet be swift, their bats mighty, their balls plentiful. And thanks for that waitress who kept calling your name.
You remember her.
Yep. So we get to the national anthem. Stillwell taunts them by saying they're going to lose. And he said he's going to keep an eye on the catcher. Says, tell the catcher to keep an eye on the pitcher. And of course, as she pulls up the mask, Dottie's back on the field for the final game. And she says, we didn't even get very far before we turned around and came back, which is like,
but you're already in game seven.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got to Yellowstone, but in those days, I mean, who knows how long it takes to get to Yellowstone from, where were they, Rockford, Illinois?
They're in the Midwest somewhere.
So, a long time.
Other trivia was that, I guess, on the car, it had, like, an A stamp for, like, whatever the gas rations were, and I guess for an A stamp, you were only rationed to 4 gallons, like, something really out, like a week, and they're like, yeah, it would be impossible for them to get home. Like, you'd have to be stopping like one city
every,
out
like 5 seconds. Yeah,
because they figure most people aren't traveling that far, all the time. Yeah, that makes sense. After being taunted, you're gonna lose, Tom Hanks goes, we're going to win, because we've got Dottie, and he throws a glove right in Stillwell's face.
Yeah.
Because fuck that kid.
He deserved it.
Yeah. So we get this game montage going, but we're all the way up to the eighth inning, and the score is still 0-0, but Racine then gets a one run. Jimmy is mad, but contains it by having some sort of seizure, basically. That's that moment you were referring to.
Oh, yeah. He's like,
Yeah, I can't put a clip because it's visual, but yeah, it's him just like shaking with anger as he tries to like
wanting to like create. I think Evelyn did something, and he wanted to like, and then he was just like, Evelyn, kind of, yeah.
And she's like, "Thank you, I'll work on whatever she says." She's so shocked that he didn't scream at her.
Yeah,
yeah. So I'll kind of yada yada our way through the game here, because there's a bunch. They score, the other team scores. All the way May gets a big hit. Doris hits a double. Dottie comes up to the plate against Kit and hits this serious line drive right by her. That leads to 2 runs being scored. And Rockford ultimately takes the lead, and we go to the bottom of the 9th, and we watch Kit just freaking out. because it's all on her and like all of the emotional stakes of everything with her sister. Like you can see like her head's exploding trying to contain all
of
this.
Is this when she's like in the dugout and she's like freaking out crying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And even the catcher's like, calm down, Kit. We still have to go, you know, even though they were getting runs or whatever.
Yeah. So we ultimately get to a point where in the bottom of the ninth where they have one runner on. There's two outs and Kit is up to bat, meaning if she scores, you know, we've got the tying run and the winning run ready to go. So
can we back up? Wait, can we back up for a minute? Because I think what's important is in a much earlier play scene is it telegraphs for what's about to happen between Dottie and Kit is in a very rough, I guess, play at home. You know, Dottie has the ball as catcher and a runner is just going to steamroll right through her. And the rule is that she'd have to tag them. It's not that whoever gets to the plate first, you have to get tagged out. And at that time when the runner blows right through her, she still holds on to the ball in the earlier scene. And so when you now get to where Kit's coming to bat, I think that's, I think you had to have the earlier scene so that you didn't know exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And at this point, Dottie calls a timeout. And she tells the pitcher, you know, high fast ones, she can't hit them. Harkening back, she can't lay off the high ones. You're the hitter. Let's go.
Last batter, standing in Rockford's way is Kit Keller. Kit is 1-for-3 today.
So, yeah, swing and a miss, strike one, repeat. But then she finally connects with one of those high ones, hits a long fly ball. The player on base scores. The Peaches manage to get the ball back to Dottie. Kit is racing towards home, and she plows.
She ignores the call to stay. She ignores the third base coach call to stay. She's like, fuck this. I'm going to just ram the fuck out of my sister.
Right, which she does. And Dottie, Queen of Diamonds, drops the ball. And this is, I think, one of the brilliant things in this movie is how ambiguous this is as to whether she dropped it on purpose or not. And they'll never answer that question. You know, we all probably have our private headcanon as to which one is correct. But the movie fortunately works either way. And I think it works better because it's not definitive.
Totally, totally agree. My thought, I don't know if any, do we want to share?
Yeah, sure.
I feel like that was going to always be one of those topics. I think she, you know, I go back and forth, but right now I'm of the position that she dropped it on purpose.
I 100% think she dropped it too.
But I always have doubt because especially in those last moments of that inning where Dottie is looking over at her and not upset that she's crying and melting down in the, you know, and telling the pitcher how to pitch, you know, she's treating her like a real athlete. It's just hard. I don't know. Like, they're just the different, you can pick up something different each time, but I think she did it for her sister.
I think my personal opinion is that she didn't drop the ball because I like the idea better that Kit earned it on her own. And then the way that Dottie kind of looks over and smiles and kind of is like, yeah, she did it. Good for her. And Dottie saying like, pitched this way, like you just said, like kind of indicates to me that she, you know, she was just going to treat her like another ball player. But yeah, I like the idea of Kit coming into her own there and earning it.
Ryan?
Oh, I think she dropped. I think she. I hear what you're saying about in the earlier how the pitcher how they she told the pitcher how to pitch, but I think when she hit that ball, I think Dottie knew that this was the last season. She wasn't going to continue. I think that this was kind of the one thing that she could give her sister, and I think she dropped it on purpose.
I think, like Doug says, it works either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works. That's a great thing, yeah.
It really depends on who you think the protagonist is, in a way. Because if the lesson of the movie is Dottie needs to learn that it's more important to help her sister succeed and, you know, and maybe atone for some of the way she's treated her in the past and all that stuff, then it makes sense that she drops the ball to give her sister the win. But if it's Kit's story of learning that, you know, she can do it on her own and, you know, she doesn't need her sister to help her out. She's a worthwhile athlete. You know, she needs to shine just as much. Then it makes sense that, no, she finally, you know, is her sister's equal and just won the game on her own steam. They both work. They're both, I think, totally valid interpretations. And again, the movie is so much better because it doesn't tell you which one of those is correct. They are both. It's Schrodinger's play, right? It's correct, right? Both ways.
Right.
Yeah. So I love that. So the Peaches are disappointed, but Kit's being carried out on, you know, their shoulders. Dottie watches this, and even though the Peaches are disappointed, you know, they can go home feeling they played a hell of a series and a hell of a game. And we find out that Walter Harvey has agreed to let the baseball league continue. So there will be another chance at this next year. And in fact, historically, the Rockford Peaches had the best winning record overall of all of the teams. They won the most World Series out of any of the girls' baseball teams. So not this. In real life, the Racine Belles did actually win the first World Series of this league. So everyone's packing up. We watch now Kit's getting to sign autographs, and, you know, she's excited that people have Racine yellow instead of Rockford pink. And Dottie, you know, tells her, you know, yeah, I'm not coming back next year.
Okay, well, you guys be good. Get dirty.
Bye, Kit.
Oh, Daddy. Look, I'm sorry I knocked you over.
No, you're not.
You were blocking the entire plate. How do you expect me to even
look,
get
it? Look, that's the way the game is played. You did what you had to do. You just beat me. You wanted it more than me.
I think I jammed my shoulder, if it makes you feel any better.
Little. Look, I'm going back to the hotel, and then Bob and I are driving back to Oregon. You're welcome to come with us.
No. You two should be alone. I'd just be in the way.
When do you think you'll be coming home?
Well, some of the girls have been talking about staying around here, you know, and getting jobs. I really like it here.
Christmas?
I don't know. But you're coming back next year, right?
No. I want to have kids. We want to have kids.
Dottie, you got plenty of time to have kids. You couldn't give this up. You'd miss this too much.
Miss it? Yeah, I miss putting on all this gear, catching a doubleheader in 100-degree heat, pushing the bus through the mud, getting slammed into every other day by a base runner. Think I'm going to miss that?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I'll miss.
What?
Well, I miss the girls. I miss you, Kit.
Me?
Yeah, how many sisters do you think I have? I love you, Kit.
Really?
Yeah.
Just when I want you to stay, you're leaving.
Just right. When I want you to go, you're leaving. Or just when I want you to stay, you're
you
leaving.
You stay, you're leaving. And she's like, are you coming back with I guess she's asked Kit if she's going to come back, and Kit's like, no, I'm going to stay here with some of the girls. Mm-hmm. And definitely she's advanced past that little creamery or dairy farm in Oregon.
Yeah. She's not, you're right. You said she's going to settle down in Racine and, you know, move right out of Oregon. And this is
the big city.
Yeah. The big city of Racine, which I think is in Indiana. Is that where it
is? No, I think it's in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. You're right. Yeah, Wisconsin.
Where's Rockford?
Yeah.
Illinois.
Yeah. Most of these teams are in the Midwest.
I mean, there might be more than one Rockford, but I'm pretty sure this Rockford's in Illinois.
Yeah. So
I always thought it was Georgia because of Georgia Peach. Never mind. Go on.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is nice because we get Jimmy's final redemption, which is that he is, you know, we find that he was offered a job to go back to the major leagues, managing in Wichita, and he turned it down to continue to manage the Peaches. So we get one last bit of Dottie telling Kit to lay off the high ones. We get the repeat of Mule Nag. Now we're back to the old ladies on the field. Dottie catches the ball, you know, barehanded, and everyone realizes it's her. We find out what happened to all these players, right? Like you said.
They have the exposition. They have, like, the sort of other bystanders sort of going, oh, she's never played again, and she was probably the best player that ever existed.
Mm-hmm. We find out that Marla Hooch is, you know, she's there. You know, she did play some more. Nelson passed away pretty recently, so they had a good long life together. Bob also, Bill Pullman died recently as well.
Right.
And Betty Spaghetti, or no, Evelyn was.
Evelyn died.
Stillwell was there. But
Stillwell Angel was there, and yeah. And then Jimmy died. Tom Hanks's character had died.
Yeah, we go into the museum itself in Cooperstown. Yeah, they show his, like, you know, profile or whatever. It says the year he died in 1987 or whatever.
Isn't John Lovitz there?
He was still there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The elder John Lovitz looks nothing like him, but he is there.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
But he, like, exudes that, like, John Lovitz scene. He's got the little cigar. He's kind of, like, tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cute. Ira gets to open the exhibit because he was the one who championed the league, which is really sweet.
Well, it's Rosie O'Donnell's character is like, you should let Mr. Lowenstein do it. Like, they actually, he wasn't originally going to, and they sort of like, no, he should be the one to do it.
Yeah, which is, that was really sweet. And then, you know, Dottie comes in as everyone is singing the theme song again and sees the photo of her and Kit. At which point Kit comes in with her family.
Her brood of
thousands
children.
Of grandchildren.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got a lot of them.
Yeah. And they get the original Rockford Peaches, including Kit and Dottie, to come and take a big picture. And that's it. We hear, we watch kind of a montage of them just playing around on the field again to Madonna's This Used to Be My Playground, the saddest and slowest Madonna song of all time.
Yeah.
I really thought that song was going to play into it more because I was a huge Madonna fan at the time. And I remember, like, buying the album or whatever and being like, this is it. This is all we get. This garbage song.
Yeah. Looking back, it's not going to be on a top 100 list of best songs ever, but it worked at the time.
Did it get nominated for any Oscars or anything?
I don't think so.
Golden Globe? Huh? Did she write it?
Oh, it did?
Hold on.
She didn't write most of her songs, I don't think.
I don't think she wrote any of her songs, did she?
I don't think so.
Written and performed, produced by Madonna and Shep Pettibone. Performing Madonna.
All right. Well, there you go.
I'm thinking Shep had a lot to do with it.
He probably did the heavy lifting, yeah, most likely.
Yeah, I think he did the heavy lifting on that.
Yeah.
At least on here, he's got the second credit, not the first one, which I believe usually the first one has the, you know, you get more of the credit. You've carried the load.
He also wrote,
I think, if you work with Madonna, you probably have to take the second credit. I just have a feeling she's like, yeah, she's like that. I don't know.
Oh, wow. He's a pretty prolific writer guy. Yeah. He's written a lot.
But to that end, she was apparently very miserable on this filming. She was nasty herself and also was very miserable.
Hmm. That's interesting. Because I think I felt like she and Rosie O'Donnell bonded pretty chummy in real life because of this. Yeah.
He wrote "I Will Survive." No. Sorry. Yeah, I think that they became friends because of this, and I think they're still like buddy buddy to this day.
Agree, but throughout all the trivia, I would say there was a solid 10-15% that was just about chronicling different Madonna like horror stories.
That doesn't surprise me.
Just sounds like she was. It sounds like she was kind of a spoiled brat, but
she probably was like, "Do you know who I am?" And like, meanwhile, it's a whole cast of characters. She's not even like the main.
Yeah, I know, but she's probably.
I can see her having ego.
At that time, she probably was the most famous person. Her and Tom Hanks, maybe.
Yeah, if you look at the cover of, I think, the, like, what would have been, I guess, the cassette at the time or DVDs, like, there's this picture, and the picture is Gina Davis, Tom Hanks, and Madonna.
Yeah.
It's their baseball cards. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I don't know how to, share my screen, or I'd share it with you.
Yeah. Well, we're here at the end. You know, we made it to the end of the movie, and I'll ask the question I always ask, which is, you know, why do you think this movie, has still captures people's hearts and minds all these decades later?
Well, I think just what we were talking about, that sort of debate, is this, you know, did Dottie do this on purpose, or was it, you know, was it a hard won battle by Kit? I think that's definitely one of those fun, you know, like the end of Inception, you know, did the spinning top stop spinning? It's just one of those things, you could talk about it, you could argue it. And it's just plain fun. This is just a great, fun movie. And sports movies are always that, you know, they're always have a good, that's a good tie-in element. Everyone can, you know, when you have a structure like that, I think it makes it fun and more approachable.
Ryan?
I think it's one of those movies you laugh, you cry, it has a lot of emotion in it. And then I agree with Tanya. I think that there's something about sports movies and the climax of that sports, kind of the ending, and that, you know, just kind of is I don't know, is I think it kind of you know, is one of those things that always makes a movie special and makes a movie kind of exciting. And I also think that it's very relatable. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of different things that go through this movie, like sister relationships and, you know, just a lot of things that people can relate to. So I that's why I like it. I think that and it's an easy watch. You don't have to, like, sit there and really think. You can watch this movie. I think it's good for a lot of different ages. I just think it kind of transcends, you know, generation. And I think that it will be popular from now. I think people will be watching it in 20 years and still enjoying it.
Yeah, everything you both said, and add to that, just a great cast of characters, both the the actors and the characters that they play are just interesting people. And a lot of good one-liners. There's so much quoting from this movie that I still quote.
That's what I was going to say. It's also super quotable. It's just super quotable throughout the movie. There's so many great lines.
Yeah, totally. So, yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, you know, easily one of the best sports movies ever made. And I think the trick to it is, yeah, I mean, the sports stuff is good. You know, it's well shot. It's, you know, you feel like you're kind of in the games. You understand what's happening and who's winning and who's losing. But there's so much going on out off the field that is really the heart and soul of the movie that makes it work, that, like, it makes you care about what's happening in a way that most sports movies, you know, your average mediocre sports movie will not get right. Because the average mediocre sports movie, you know, your Any Given Sundays or whatever, is only caring about who wins and loses the game, which is, like, winning and losing in this movie is not defined by, you know, who wins and loses the game against, you know, Rockford against Racine. It's about the characters winning and losing on their terms, you know, what matters to them. And that stuff is so compelling. And as Amy, you mentioned, the performances here, all of them are stellar. And especially, I think, Gina Davis and Tom Hanks. I mean, Gina Davis is just luminous in this movie. She's kind of got four really big movies in her career, and this is one of them. That's pretty much Beetlejuice, The Fly, this one, and Thelma and Louise. And she's a very different character in all four of those movies, but in every single one of them, like, she, the second she's on screen, you know, you are just invested 1,000% in whatever her character is about. She just has that quality that she brings. And Tom Hanks, you know, is here at, again, at the height of his comedic powers, you know, in this era of his career. And, like, for a character that should come off as a cartoon, he doesn't. Like, you still feel like he belongs in the movie, you know, despite kind of how broad this character is. Like, it all works together really, really well. So, yeah, guys, we did it. We did A League of Our Own. Damn it, I did it again. A League of Their Own. I know we don't have too much to plug, but Amy, you want to plug your earrings?
Sure. If you're interested in earrings, you can find me at Momo Bunnies More Co. on Instagram, TikTok. We'll cut that.
We're fanging it in TikTok. In Fargo, it's TikTok.
TikTok. What did I say? Instagram, TikTok, and Etsy, of course.
That's where they are. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Ryan, Tanya, anything you want to plug? Or
Nope. I'm good. Thank you.
If everyone wants to watch a bunch of crazy kids on the field, just let me know. It's amusing.
That's right. Yeah, come see her kids play baseball.
Watch me not be able to figure out pitch count. I don't understand if I'm just counting pitches. I still can't get the number right.
So you have to sit there and count pitches. How hard is that for you to not talk, not move around, and literally just count?
The other scorekeeper mom and I are like, wait, how many pitches was that? So we're talking to each other and not figuring it out. And we asked the umpire, and they're like, you need to know that. The first game we did it, we couldn't even get the points right. We couldn't figure out. We had it that we were winning 3-2. The other team said they were winning 3-2. We also thought there was maybe a 3-3 score, so it's a hot mess.
Was there crying?
There's always crying in little kid baseball.
Yes, there is.
Or little kid anything.
Fair, yeah. So just to do the quick admin on our side, of course, if you like this show, please go wherever you found it and drop it a review. That is very, very helpful. It doesn't take very long. Word of mouth is good, so let people know you like it. And then if you want to get in touch with us, I'll put links to all of our social media portals in the show notes, but we're on all the major social networks there. If you have thoughts on our recent episodes, which, as I mentioned, last was Happy Gilmore, before that was Led Zeppelin, and before that was The Terminator, the first one. Coming up next, I believe, is The Big Lebowski, followed by Monty Python's Flying Circus, if I'm doing my math right. And I've got a lot of fun episodes set to be recorded, including one with Tanya. We're going to do The Wizard, which I'm really excited. I haven't seen that in decades, so I'm very curious to see how that holds up.
That's me and Jonathan coming back.
Yeah, we're going to do The Wizard. I've got recorded. We're talking about doing South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. The South Park movie, and gosh, I have a whole
bunch. This group is, I think, doing theme songs?
We might be doing, yeah, TV theme songs. I've got Blazing Saddles we're going to do. I've got that lined up, so lots of fun stuff.
We have Ghostbusters, too.
Yeah, we still got to find a time to do Ghostbusters, too. Hopefully we'll try and get that out before Frozen Empire at the end of March. So lots of neat stuff planned on the cast. So, guys, thanks again for doing this. This, you know, always a treat recording with you guys and watching this movie.
Thanks for having us. Not like
you. Bye.
All right. So until next time, there's one more entry in the Nostalgium Arcanum.
I think the uniform was, in the 1940s, a significant part of the drawing of the people, the crowds, the fans that came to the game. As I remember in the 40s, women didn't wear shorts, not in public. You come out with this, and a lot of these gals were really attractive too. Come out with this short uniform, these good looking legs, and their whole purpose of developing this league or beginning this league, that uniform was a significant part of it.
The fact that P.K. Wrigley insisted that the spectators knew that those were women out there playing the game by the way they acted, by the uniform, how they dressed off the field, etc., made me realize that that was a very important part of women in sport.
Oh my. Well, playing in those dresses and skirts was something else, but Mr. Wrigley wanted us to look like young ladies and play ball like men. And that's exactly what we did.